Welcome to another Poetica podcast from RN. I'm Justine Sloan-Lees. In September this year, poet, radio broadcaster and teacher Martin Harrison died suddenly. As a tribute to Martin, we're replaying a two-part feature made in 2005 when Martin and fellow poet Sam Wagon Watson took to the road together to read and discuss their work. Their readings form a conversation, a dialogue of poems, as they travel through urban and outback landscapes, noting the imagery of life on the road from their different perspectives. Martin Harrison began publishing poetry in his native England in the 1970s, then later settled in Australia. He taught sound composition and writing at the University of Technology, Sydney. He published 8 poetry books, including The Kangaroo Farm, Summer, and Wild Bees, as well as a collection of essays, Who Wants to Create Australia? At the time of his death, he was working on a new book called Happiness, which is due out next year. Samuel Wagon Watson is of Birriggubba, Mananjali, German, Scottish, and Irish descent, and currently lives in Brisbane. His poetry collections include Itinerant Blues, the award-winning Smoke Encrypted Whispers, and most recently, Love Poems and Death Threats. I hope you enjoy On the Road, Part 1.
What do you say we hit the road?
Just inside the car.
Yeah, let's go.
Do you want to start? Do you want to start?
Oh, no, look, you...
Should I start?
But after this session, I'll be just pumping it out. How far into the night are we going to go, mate?
I love the speed of your work.
You're very surgical.
I can see it. I can actually see it on the page.
Yeah, the haiku.
It's an endless line.
Have a long sort of upchuck of... Just get everything out.
Got so much room to move within it.
Into a block of words and then...
Well, poetry isn't fiction.
I don't know. It just works for me and...
Driving very fast.
Fine, I'm in the zone. I've got to be in the zone all week.
It's just a little moment looking out the window on the road.
You're the experienced senior man.
I still
feel like the green behind the ears kid.
Why don't I start with that, one of the Crow poems?
Yeah.
This is a poem called Roadside Near Hilston, and Hilston's sort of way out in inland New South Wales. Roadside Near Hilston. A crow on a fence post in winter light sets its acute on a mile of fence. The driver passing on the red dirt road focuses flatness on that black event, its neck and dead still beak, its indecision whether to stay or not. The crow is looking round, about to turn, about to take off, leaping an invisible ladder up to cirrus blue, to tangible, wind-scalloped blue. It's not making heavy weather out of landing here. It can float up and take us all in, take us as part of the land's glare as easily as weight and watches sailing by. Like a small detail at the side of a Renaissance picture, it proves that even crows are fruitful. This one flutters up, settles again a few yards off. The kangaroo bar, the rear side door, the crackling CB radio slide past. Pebble light flashing in the road bounces on our eyes. Behind us, a pillar of smoke, a trail of dust.
So I suppose I look at all of these poems that I've written as like they're the Polaroids from out of my head, through my eyes, you know, I'm taking photos. But yeah, for some reason, crows, they're just such a hard, disgusting animal. But they merit a lot of weight in my work. A bent neck black and flustered feather mallow. deadened crow with eternal lockjaw, a bent neck black and flustered feather mallee, not as gracious as a magpie. Neck bent into the wind and bitumen madness that claimed you. Scorched mark and tears fallen into the blackened tar and earth, blood-soaked earth through massacre, war and plague. This is someone's land, played host to someone's lust, of a bent neck black and flustered feather mallee. Ants scream, wage war and curse the rain. Black feathers scatter the highway, teasing the frozen bitumen spirits, locked in the heat and tar, sealed forever, like the constant anger and sorrow within, a bent neck black and flustered feather mallee. The thousand-yard stare. I remember Lulu in a blue sarong and a tow truck driver whose dirty jokes couldn't go wrong. Because at the beginning of the journey, there are no bad memories of roadside love. But now I've got the thousand-yard stare because the breakdowns are just too frequent. Stuck out here on a fractured highway of angst, there's no more emergency phone calls. The dial tone has gone cold, dead as the bitumen. No longer can I pick from the tar inklings of love. So now I've got the thousand-yard stare down the endless road in my head that I have to walk back alone, retinas burning, flanked by a red, rabbit-jacked landscape while the crows swoop and pick. I'm wanting to say sorry for all those breakdowns. I was just going blind. And now on my own it's hard, finding it hard, finding my way home.
Yeah. Are they related to crows?
Are they related to crows?
I don't think so, but they do have that similar look, don't they?
Mm. So this is all midden?
Yeah, it looks like it, doesn't it? Most of it, yes.
I think some of the other area we came down on the edge of the road was midden too, actually.
One of my cousins, because there's middens all through Stradbroke Island, one of my cousins found an axe head, a green stone axe head, and the Queensland Museum have it. And they're not sure whether it's jade from China or the green stone from New Zealand. Stories are just starting to come out now about canoe trips that were made by New Zealand as they came over here, so a rare find.
How long ago was it?
A couple of hundred years ago, but you know, those stories are still dying out, they're coming out.
Do you want to start again?
Yeah, I'll start with a morning poem. 3 a.m. escape. Got off the couch and immediately the room cleared of its winged creatures, flapping in time to an abdominal exercise machine on the glowing box. Ugh! Falling asleep again without turning off the television, the evangelists would be up soon with their healing tentacles of credit card lust. My mind cleansed by amber spirits, leaving a palate as rough as cindery thongs and the last remnants of yesterday hanging off my crumpled clothing. Flashbacks of a late-night telephone call to the ex-wife, like a scientist hell-bent on an answer for cancer. The sun was on the way up over a cloud-spangled banner as the jury slept. Time to get on the road again and grab a radar gun breakfast.
There is a way back there to the red gum with its rain of red flowers soaking the dirt where tracks fork. One route snakes up the gully side to the bare tableland where roads become double tar treads, moonlit low down through salt brush. The other turns back to egg-shaped stones, always tumbling in a dry creek bed. Alone there, the tree's branches cloud outwards into the sky's already fish-finned grey. now breaking through, drenching it, like surf wash under a rusty pier. Paler now, the car dashboard glimmers its green haze. Up front, a slope shapes light. And it's a very early poem of mine, and I look at it and I think, yeah, even sort of back then, I was really sort of trying to, you know, get some sense of sort of moving forward and the shifting position you have in relation to light and the slope and land and landscape and so on. You know, that sort of aesthetic, in a sense, of the road was there.
I'm jealous. I reckon my writing's going to take a bit of a turn after this. It's just, you know, you're very surgical, whereas I've just sort of picked up things off the road. Like, I haven't stopped and smelled the flowers enough, I think, mate.
The real people who influenced me in poetry were not so much poets. They were actually painters and photographers. And I love the way that that painters and photographers can work. And I've always, I mean, like, I think like a lot of poets, in a sense, I sort of envied the capacity of visual artists to deal with the world, you know, to use their hands in relation to the world and to kind of, you know, handle such beautiful things, handle colours and handle beautiful textures and beautiful papers and, you know, paint and all that kind of thing. And it's really been an incredible influence upon me.
Similarly, Francis Ford Coppola is probably one of my favourite. I wouldn't say director. I look at him as an artist.
Yeah, I mean, film the same. I mean, film scenes. I mean, I think if you can get a kind of a film scene in a poem, I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think it's in your work too. I think it is that.
Well, it's weird. I remember as a kid watching Apocalypse Now, and both my mum and dad were arrested as, you know, anti-Vietnam protesters when they'd first hooked up, and I remember Dad saying to me, oh, you don't want to watch Apocalypse Now, you know, it was a shocking war, and he was going on, but I remember one part, Dad was sort of walking past the TV, and there was this shattered Marlon Brando in this old temple, and he was reading a poem, and I said to Dad, where's that poem from? And he said, you know, it was T.S. Eliot's The Hollow Man. And so through looking through that, I instantly thought, watching Apocalypse Now, I picked up, you know, one of my favourite poets is T.S. Eliot. And, of course, T.S. Eliot he wrote that to complement Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness, which, you know, Apocalypse Now is based on.
Stay on the road, maybe.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll read The Golden Skin of Cowgirls. At the end of a brief Warrego sojourn, hungry and gravel-strung, after searching for days and only finding emptiness, accompanied by road trains heading for the slaughterhouse, little piggy eyes staring through the slats of the trailers with a beige yet invisible shit mist that stays up your nose and gets into everything. And like the classical lion with a thorn in its paw, Brisbane lurks on the other side of those hills. Smooth green monoliths tickled by the arias of Harold Blair as they reflect the silky breeze that sometimes carries the perfume from the golden skin of cowgirls. Award-winning, lightly browned pastry, best pies and cream buns this side of the Great Divide, where the road trains pause and truckers chow down on sausage rolls and waves of sweet, darkened milk. Letting Piggy buy some time before the boners get the best of him. Nothing out here at the moment but crackling radio waves that deliver Piggy his requiem, Charlie Pride Easy over Agriculture Blues. So we're staying on the road for a while, mate?
Yeah, I'll read Clouds Near Wadi.
Okay.
Which is a kind of being in the car poem. Clouds Near Wadi. On looking up at the elephants, you could wonder where you were. They were hovering on a chain like Hannibal's in the Alps. Elephant shapes bulging, linked together, crossing from north to south, visible as a desert fantasy of warnings, pillars, God's truth. White narcissi, they came from nowhere along the edge like sky's debris, intruders in another medium, like stage scenery painted on that blue. Painted so you forgot springtime hordes of yellow daisies conquering new wheat, or Patterson's curse in purple ribbons flickering either side of the road, and forgot those huge Egyptian prows unmoored 2 days back amid green, the Grampians, Mount Arapiles, drifting on the Wimmera's plain. As I drove, Earth was paradox, flat for miles, yet curving into clouds, sensed like a rearview mirror's glimpse, yet always opening up, leading onwards, through skylines, endless replacements, which fixed each farm's checkerboards, with time measured in gum tree tops, floating backwards on far horizons.
I suppose with my writing and the road poems, like hearing your work now, as writers, we seem to make the character of what we see on the road, like, give it that mortality. But in Brisbane especially, where like we had this beautiful highway once that went from Brisbane to the Gold Coast, and it had character. There were things we saw on that highway. Yet now it's all kind of a state after a state that look like each other. But just in response to that poem, I'd read Deo Optimo Maximo. And I found this line, I can't remember where I found it, but in Latin it means, Deo Optimo Maximo means to God the best and greatest. But when I read to God the best and greatest, it kind of reminded me of a couple of my mates sitting over the hood of a Tirana, sort of looking at the engine going, oh, to God the best and greatest. But anyway, and I dedicated this to Matt Foley, who Matt Foley was the arts minister of the time, and a great poet from up there, and he really pushed poetry when he was in the arts, but he understood that stretch of highway, and anyway, Deo Optimo Maximo. Lurching onto the highway, sporting a rushed pair of 595 truck stop sunglasses. Facing off with this intermittent black line, its cusps hidden in gullies forging south as it does northward. Curvaceous segments of road, like black smiles and frowns, either gazing in the direction of the Pacific or the hinterlands, dark horses upon the clearing of the Dreamtime Tabernacles. This stretch from Brisbane to the Gold Coast, since the 70s, its character has been raped too. In what was briefly Joe Bajolki Peterson's country, yes. This multi-lane monument to the gods of old and new, the bandits touched by the spiritual fingers of radar guns and speed cameras, the all-knowing, all-seeing Deo Optimo Maximo on the tongues of the rogues, to God, the best and greatest. Yet by God's hand, what happened to the beasts that inhabited the African lion safari? And did the UFO above the roadhouse just fly away? Or can we even recognise the cemetery where the solitary Anzac stands, that the surfers would salute to secure a pact with Huey and his crystal palace on the early morning tide? Protected from the glare by 595 truck stop sunglasses, no one respects the speed limits and no one owns up to the roadside crosses. 'Cause I know. There is no God. There is only the living and trailers of the dead.
So what do you think of those rocks?
Oh. No, I'd like to... Yeah. I'd like to spend a bit more time down here. I might come back down here when I've got some time off and I've got Samuel down here again.
Yeah, the harbour's filled with these sorts of places. Mm. I mean, they're wonderful. Mm.
Oh,
No, but these places, they're very many-sided, these sorts of places, aren't they? Because they're what's left of what was in the harbour, and you don't know what's actually been left, and what's actually was here, and who was here, and all of that. You just don't know. I mean, that's some people do know a little bit more about it.
These rocks were probably just would have been pasted in oyster shells, whereas now we just see them like sporadically.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Can I read something which is the downside of driving, but in a way it's also a kind of a very photographic and sort of filmic poem in many ways, actually. But again, interestingly, it's kind of in the car. In fact, to some degree, I've got almost to the point of thinking, some of my recent work to kind of definitely not be in the car any longer, because I've been in the car sort of enough, in a way. But... anyway, this poem is called The Driver. Someone was taping up the road and waved me on, saying, "It's okay." In the verge, a couple huddled over, two other cyclists standing near them. It seemed wrong to look. They were the half-victims, burdened with guilt, placed in time. The next few corners, I knew the road. These were my thoughts. First, the jacket draped round the huddled woman's shoulders, like a blurred image in a painting, a few brush strokes in tall grass. Then, against everything, the youthful no surprise of death. Then fate's blankness, how it's meaningless, a sky with a single crow winging its black dot across it. Then the permanence of someone's going, leaving, dying. Then how, walking away, the dead unmake an invisible space we've always known. They're the unthought light where we all walk. Then nagging fear, the tragedy out of the blue, one day marks me with its sad repeats, some story, some half-seen thing, lodged there like a lifetime's mood. Already, writing this down, I sound like a character in my own thoughts. A half hour before I got there, some kid hurtled into darkness, flung forwards down the slope, into the year's first cooler air, like a diver swallowtailing beneath a pool's shaky water. A melted body sliding under, broken in pieces. Along the road, spilt flotsam of the paramedics. A wheelbase for a stretcher, blankets, a frame for plasma. It was a film set. A nightmare picnic gone adrift. I drove on, entering my own thought's valley, its filtered shadows stretched out to now, rather until an hour ago. I began thinking about it, testing the season's change, some rain. First stray locusts had started flittering through new grass, lifting off, floating onward a pace or two. One followed me in to hang there, inside, on the kitchen door. The bad joke, choppers, came to mind. Outside, greenness had splashed the slopes, gathering more strongly in the gullies, on the flats. Just now, too, a swirl of fartails lassoed the backstep sunlight, a quick storm of molecules flashing crimson underwings. They were jets of rushing wing noise, flapping canvas on the ear. They were a movement in a dance, swerving in unison. Perhaps their earth shadow's downdraft is what focused me. My mind's filled still with what I saw before the accident. That guy, teenager really, helmet in hand, geared up, standing on the first of the bends where the road narrows blindly before a one-lane wooden bridge. He was flagging traffic, signalling with a calming gesture to slow up, watch out. His streaked blonde hair shaken loose from helmet and leather. I'd slowed down already, braking, stopping for an instant. I glanced across. "What's wrong?" I asked. Then, "Someone's been killed." The gap echoed like a cave, an effect of the road shelf, the trees. His words, direct, ignorant, spiraled across the space. Sharpened April light blinked like a flooded channel.
This came back just now as I stepped indoors out of the day. His standing there beneath the trees had got to me. The mix of confidence and numbness, the instant urgency, the suddenness of things with which no one could grieve. That moment, travelling at the speed of light, caught me out. Under a glimpse of widening sky, disordered rivers held their flow. The pale-winged locusts floated up before they whirled to earth. I thought of rotor blades, of pale flowers crashing down.
Been down that road.
Yes, we've all been down that road.
Yeah. 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 We might go down to Byron Bay. Gas tank sonnets. 1 hour out of Byron Bay and no dreams for 3 days. When the snakes in the engine hatched a mutiny. The radiator hose was the first to go. A roadside heart attack. Meatball surgery with a Swiss Army knife and almost hijacked by hitches. The days and days of service station pies finally ripped through my spare tyre, and cocktails of on-edge nerves did their work. While all the time, across the hills, the Pacific looking good enough to eat. Feelings of withdrawal, leaving Byron Bay and the Muse for the likes of Brisbane Town, and this want of becoming a writer. Tongue dragging along the bitumen, regurgitating yesterday's gravel, the mind aflush with gas tank sonnets.
I love the speed of your work, actually, and I very much like that sense that, you know, there is this very sort of rapid kind of movement in the work, very rapid kind of line in the work, which I think is great. I tend to kind of be someone who puts a lot of, I think, tends to put a lot of information in, as it were, lots of rapid things are happening, as it were, in the poem. But in a way, The surfaces of my work tend to be a bit more still in some way. I think they are a bit more photographic in a way.
Yeah. I can't stay still. I'm struggling now, just sitting in this chair.
How do you feel about a picnic? Can you?
Yeah. I could certainly do something. Yep.
I'm fine. Yes, thank you. You're offering. I'm
just a little bit of sun and a bit of a saunter.
Yes, we need our vitamin D.
Oh, I'm fine. I'm in the zone.
You're in the
zone. I've got to be in the zone all week.
Run down, up and down.
Oh, well, there's a train on the bridge.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. A few good. I want to find someone who can tell us a story about being on the road and, like, surviving on a pack of noodles or something for a whole tour, you know?
Yes.
I think that'd be interesting. So I remember doing the Newcastle Young Writers Festival and surviving on the Arnott's cookies that were in the pub room.
Yeah.
And free coffee and tea.
Right.
Very welcome. Right, I didn't expect this at all. I thought... I groan usually about these things, but, you know, like having to do something in a studio, but it's been fantastic this morning.
Toby's serious eyes, don't they?
They're beautiful dogs.
Just waiting our turn to tuck in.
Brett Dionysius, we'd been out for a big night and we got home. I was staying at my sister's place and she had dogs at the time. And we were pretty much off our tree and we ate a whole pack of chop chip cookies. And then Nicole said a few days later, the dog's heartworm cookies. Where are they?
Oh, no.
I don't know, sis. I don't know. Said you haven't seen them. No, no. They tasted beautiful. They're
right,
a bit tough, but they were tasty.
You're a sucker for a dog.
Like good food and alcohol for me this week, I tell you. If I died at the end of this week and I was cremated, I'd probably burn for a month. I just realised now, looking at the bottom of this wine, I've got this thing at the
This evening, yes.
Oh, you've got a gig on tonight. Have you?
No, it's an awards dinner.
Yes, Martin was telling me you're both going to the Premier's Literary Awards.
Maybe you can have a little kip in the afternoon, a bit of power kip.
Actually, watch your equipment, because I bet when that dog comes up, it's going to shake off right next to us. Dogs always do it.
This is a quietish moment for daytime poem, maybe.
Yeah, go on. Carefree. You'd never forget the pelicans because it was their home too, and that occasional one who'd try and swallow your baited hook. While we cast out into an endless mould of brown and blue skin, sometimes catching our line in its enormous and clumsy wingspan, floating around the jetty, constantly boasting that huge gullet, so close to the pylons covered in poison oyster shells that waited for the bare flesh within our gate. Mum worried that we'd get sick from eating them. Dad saying the sewage from the caravan park would sometimes flow near where we fished, and that the oysters bathed in it too. Little buckets of a few brim, silver catch of a meal, and the persistent cats at our ankles lapping up the smell. Running up past the shop, a front window necropolis of stonefish in Vegemite jars, suspended in a vault of clear alcoholic brine, still deadly in death. And us in bare feet all the time, three kids in stonefish-infested mud, playing Russian roulette. One good pair of running shoes between us.
Bit of action.
Go away!
Get off!
Stinky dog!
You had to, didn't you?
Stinky dog.
We should probably get going.
Would you be able to drop us off to the Intercontinental on the way back or somewhere near there?
I think so.
I'll see you Friday.
Okay. So have a good
Thank
time
you for
tonight.
Beautiful lunch and everything.
Have fun,
it.
Bye.
So have you and Sam thought about what you're going to do on Friday? Sort of, yes. We had a bit of a conversation on the Not Strong Terrace, basically.
Oh, good.
And so, and we'll have another one during the week, too. So.
It seemed to flow pretty effortlessly this morning.
Yeah, oh, no. Amazing. We know each other's work moderately well, so that's good.
Great day.
Lovely day. Okay, yeah. Martin. See you. Bye.
In Sydney, this report from Oscar McLaren. The book Smoke Encrypted Whispers by Brisbane-based poet Samuel Watson was announced as Book of the Year, and it also won the $15,000 Kenneth Slessor Prize for Poetry.
Thanks for coming along to the Acroshell for this afternoon's fantastic reading with Sydney-based poet Martin Harrison and Brisbane-based poet Samuel Wagon Watson. It's a real honour to be hearing Samuel Wagon Watson reading his work right here this afternoon, the recipient of the New South Wales Premier's Award, Kenneth Slessor Prize for Poetry, and Book of the Year Award for this year's New South Wales Premier's Prize. Samuel Wagon Watson.
Hotel Bone. The street resembles a neck from a wayward guitar, with Hotel Bone sitting idle on a vein, wedged between two frets where the bad tunes can reach her. These white stucco walls, I imagine, once carried a vision of pearl, now a gourd for asylum seekers. Iraqi, Indonesian, Sri Lankan, and one crazy Aboriginal who lives with a typewriter. But not with the brevity of a visa on my head. No, my longevity was guaranteed before I was born. In the 1967 referendum, the freedom to practice the voodoo of semantics within the marrow of Hotel Bone. Existence only 2 minutes' walk from some of the best latte lounges in the city, yet white faces don't come down here.
until they've been classified unfit for duty, no longer permitted upon the chorus line of the Cappuccino song, where multiculturalism is in an airline seating format of first-class business and economy. But those of us who submit to the chance of mystery flights end up on the tar of Hotel Bone, a haven from Saddam, Suharto, the Tamil Tigers and One Nation. This Hotel Bone, it is hard, it is reachable, it is home. Thank you very much. Please welcome Martin Harrison to the podium.
On this kind of rocky boat, right, I am a totally land-loving person and land-based, and my work is land-based. And I say it's about as close as I ever get to being on the water. In fact, you know, this is getting a little bit too far out in the ocean for me, all of this stuff. So, okay, landscape, okay. So there's a little bit my sort of overview of the state of mind and state of country, in a sense. Landscape. Country with too many names, with a past which recedes to stones, where flatness becomes unconscious, a wetland's white smear on the horizon, while ibis and herons take off from dead branches of mirrored white gums, gaunt against cloudless blue, which has been that colour for a decade and will stay so for another decade or two, and where, after a day's driving, you meet a small barrier of trees left out on the skyline, yet slowly getting larger, she-oaks, river red gums, with amongst them a glittering brown snake flowing thousands of kilometres to an ocean without a skerrick of yacht sail. It's an ocean as abstract as snow on a TV screen. Is to take a shot as an amateur photographer might do. The figures lost in background, the wrong things stand out. And yet they're there, revealed, dilapidated, dry, visible as clumsy detail in light that's too glaring, in another nearly forgotten image of a half-collapsed white weatherboard weekender perched behind dunes recently replanted in marram and pigface, or the rusted once yellow Ford Falcon parked there by the sleepout, and the mongrel dog on the driveway chasing flies or its tail in salt-tasting midday heat, while small waves, way to one side, mark ebb tide gleaming behind three moving dots, one in a sarong, the other two in thongs and shorts, who are trekking back home over dunes bare of shadow, like a bunch of teenies who've just bonged up at the beach. We're going to try and do a kind of connect the work and then counterpoint and see how we go.
With this rocking motion, what do you say we hit the road?
And in this Poetica podcast from RN, you've been listening to On the Road, Part 1, with Samuel Wagon-Watson and Martin Harrison. The producers were Jane Ullman and Russell Stapleton. Martin and Sam's journey will continue in our next podcast. I hope you can join me for that.